Okay, good evening everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. Tonight I would like to start by acknowledging that we are meeting on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, pay my respects to their elders past and present. And the local panel also acknowledges the present Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who reside within this area. Meeting today is to consider a number of development applications on the agenda. Panel members for tonight are myself, Richard Pearson as the independent chair, Helen Lockhead and Sean Carter as independent expert members, and community representative John McInerney. I welcome everyone to the meeting and please be assured the panel will be making decisions tonight on the planning merits of each application and following views expressed tonight and also in submissions received. Determinations and any relevant decision of the panel will be by a majority of votes with members present, and if votes are tied, the chair will have the casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decisions are published as part of the minutes of the meeting, and where the panel goes against or amends the officer's recommendation, we will state our reasons for doing that. Please also be advised that in relation to item 5, the development application for City Road Chippendale, there was a what's called a relevant 2 memo prepared by council staff, which was made available on the council's website, and copies also available in the foyer. The format we follow tonight is that with each item, the Acting Manager of Planning Assessments will provide an overview of each application as they are considered, the key issues raised, and the recommendation of Council staff. We'll then hear from members of the public who have registered to speak, followed by the applicant and or the applicant's representatives who may like to address issues raised by members of the public. Please note there is a 3-minute time limit for speakers with a warning bell at 2 minutes. Also, I would ask that all speakers be heard in silence and shown courtesy and respect. If you are registered to speak, your address will be recorded. All meetings of the panel are recorded and the recordings are available on the City's website. Please note no recording or filming of the meeting other than that. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application. That may involve adjourning the meeting to confer amongst ourselves, but in the main it will be done following the consideration of any submissions made at this meeting and any response from council staff. We will always, even if we adjourn, reconvene in a public forum to make our decision. If we consider more information is required before making a decision, it's possible we may defer an item for consideration at a later date. So I now move to item 1 on the agenda, which is disclosures of interest, and I have 2 disclosures of interest. Mr. Carter has disclosed a significant pecuniary interest in item 3 on the agenda, the development application for Shepherd Street, Chippendale. As he designed that development application, he's a registered architect and it was prepared by his office. So Mr. Carter will leave the meeting prior to consideration and determination of that matter, as per his significant pecuniary conflict of interest declaration. Mr. McInerney has also declared in this case a non-significant, non-pecuniary interest in the same item, merely due to his shared membership of a community organisation with Mr. Carter. But Mr. McInerney will remain for discussion and determination of that item. Item 2, confirmation of minutes. The panel notes the minutes of the meeting of the 13th of June of the local planning call, which were endorsed by me as chair and published on the council's website. That moves us to the first development application, which is item 3, DA for 49-51 Shepherd Street, Chippendale. John Carter will leave the meeting as per his declaration of interest. And that having been achieved, I now we do have 2 speakers for this item. I've got Owen O, the owner, in the first place. Owen, if you could come to the seat at the end of the table and press the button. Yep, I'll take a seat, obviously. And press the button, and if you'd like to address the panel. Oh, look, I'm very sorry, Owen. I've just completely ignored my own procedures here. We will have a presentation from Andrew Reese, as the acting planning manager. Very dark. Please take a seat. And away you go, Andrew.
Thank you, Chair. This is to do with 41 to 51 Shepherd Street, Chippendale. The architect is Carter Williamson, and the consultant is Urbis, and the applicant owner is Mr. Owen O and Elaine Chow. It's alterations and additions and use of the warehouse as the dwelling and a secondary dwelling at the rear, and it's recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application was notified in March and three submissions were received, which raised issues of visual privacy. But there were also two of those submissions were in support of the application. So the site is in red and where the submitters are in blue. This is an aerial view of the site. This is the ground floor of the primary residence at the front fronting Shepherd Street on the right hand side of the diagram, and the rear lane structure at the, or studio at the back in the rear laneway. That's the rooftop terrace. Yes, there it is, there's the plans and the rooftop terrace there. And there's a section, another section, another section. That's a northern elevation and the southern elevation, and it's viewed from the eastern side, the eastern elevation, the new rooftop deck on the top with the balustrade, and that's the view from the western elevation and the other rooftop terrace fronting Shepherd Lane on the west and the lower portion of that diagram. It's a photo montage. There's another photo montage. And again, another photo montage looking southwest. To do with materials, mostly in brick and also lightweight materials at the top. In terms of compliance with controls, it's non-compliant with the 9 metre height control, although the existing building is already over, but the proposal would take it even more over the 9 metre height. There is a non-compliance with the FSR of 1.74:1. Car parking is compliant, and the secondary dwelling is compliant in terms of the controls, about not exceeding more than 30% of the main dwelling. There is a compliance with the height and stories. There is compliance with solar access. There is a slight non-compliance with the deep soil, which is found to be acceptable. And there's also compliance with the private open space. In terms of the height, the issues is, includes the height non-compliance, non-compliance with floor space and the roof terrace. A 4.6 variation under the LEP has been submitted to vary the height standard, which can be seen here, the red line showing where the 9 metres is, and the rest of it is non-compliant. And that's the photo montage looking north, again showing where that non-compliance would be. There are no amenity impacts, which is, so it's acceptable, but it's subject to reducing the bulk of the stairwell and setting back the balustrade, which is shown in this diagram here in red. And again, the red line showing what would be the result of the condition consent to cut it back. In terms of FSR, a 4.6 variation has been submitted. The existing building already exists, exceeds the standard, but the proposal does add to by 17 square metres, thereabouts. However, there is no additional amenity impacts from that floor space, so it's acceptable. In terms of the roof terraces and the privacy screens above the secondary dwelling, in our opinion, adds to the visual clutter and privacy impacts to the neighbours. There is internal access already provided from the secondary dwellings to other roof terraces. So that's the roof terrace, which is recommended to be non-trafficable. There's a more detailed plan and an elevation of that roof terrace, which is recommended to be converted to non-trafficable green roof. And the recommendation is for approval.
Thank you, Andrew. So I will now ask Mr. Owen O to come and address the panel. Thank you.
Uh, Good afternoon, Chair, Planning Panel and Council staff. My name is Owen and I'm here with my wife Elaine and Tim Blythe from Urbis. We are a family of four with two boys, Oliver who's four and Benjamin who's two. We are the owners of 4951 Shepherd Street, which we hope to make our family home. Elaine and I thank you for your time and consideration for our development application and the opportunity to address the panel. We are in agreement with all but one of the design modifications. We would like to use this opportunity to further discuss design modification 2A and put forward our case to see if council would agree. Design modification 2A relates to the green space over the secondary dwelling to Shepherd's Lane. We believe the proposed lower roof garden to Shepherd's Lane is similar to that of our opposite neighbour. If allowed, I would like to hand around some images of Shepherd's Lane and the area of our neighbour's roof garden, which would be situated opposite ours. Is that possible, just to hand some images? Or no? We believe we can deal with any privacy concerns of our adjacent neighbours with minimal privacy screens. You can also see we have set back the side by 900 millimetres to further take away any overlooking concerns the neighbours may have. The reason the roof garden is so important for Elaine and myself is that we would love to have a sunny outdoor green space for our two young boys to play on that is close to the outdoor living area and where we can keep an eye on them. We envisage it to be like a small backyard. Apart from wanting it for our family home, we do believe from the experience of living in our previous home that the roof garden will make the rear laneway a more friendly, communal and safer space as we will be able to look onto the laneway which is narrow and filled mainly with garage doors. I ask you to consider our case and allow us to have the roof garden to Shepherd's Lane for our family home. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. One more speaker, which is Tim Blythe on behalf of the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and panel. And my name is Tim Blythe, the Director of Urbis, responsible for the application presented tonight. I'll try not to repeat what Owen said, but just a bit of the backstory. I think one important thing for the panel to consider in overall context is that this is an existing non-conforming use. Industrial commercial building. So the opportunity presented to council is to convert it back to a conforming use for the site being residential. And I'm sure that partly has been the reason why council's been offers are supportive of some of the changes in terms of floor space and building height. And as Owen indicated, even in the application as presented, it tried very hard to reduce the visual impact, you see at the upper levels where, but as Owen has indicated, the applicant is prepared to accede to council's request to remove the upper level balustrade or set it back and also to reduce the top of the stairwell. So really from a point of view of streetscape impact, there is simply no impact in terms of the overall built form and presentation for public domain. So it does come back to the re-roof terrace. And the other thing that I also wanted to bring to the panel's attention is that whilst we fully support the council's recommendation and obviously wish to see this application approved, there is a balance to be reached in terms of this is quite a reasonably, you know, a large volume of space within this existing building, so it's going to be a relatively generous dwelling. The applicants are clearly trying to ensure there is a reasonable amount of open space in an existing building environment. So whilst the building is being carved out, there's some hollowing out of parts of buildings for voids, but they're not going to provide the solar amenity or the outdoor space that clearly they seek. So we do think there are extenuating circumstances in this matter where by about having enclosed that roof terrace in terms of privacy screening onto a rear lane, which is, I would say, a non-sensitive environment in terms of the neighbours. And it is important to note there's only one submission out of 102 notifications, and that submitter is three doors away. So not directly affected by this, nor is there any overshadowing. If you look at the overshadowing diagrams, any shadowing that would be caused by the screening actually would fall across the lane. Those existing houses to the south are already affected at midwinter to a pretty much a complete extent. So there is actually no shadowing impact on the screening into those adjacent properties. So on merit, we would ask ask the panel to just consider this matter. We're not here to, we want the application approved, don't get me wrong, but that there's any possibility to obviously enhance amenities of property to its greatest extent without impacting our neighbours, we would seek that indulgence. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. So John has a question of you, DeVos.
These photographs, could you explain, I assume they're nearby or something, is that?
That first photo you're showing is actually taken from the rear of the existing building at first level. So that green roof you see in the foreground is actually the roof effectively where you'd be standing on as a rear terrace area, because the new outdoor space sits on effectively the existing building at the back of the site at one level above laneway level. So that's probably the closest resemblance to the view you would have from standing on that roof terrace. Maybe you're a little bit higher, a bit hard to tell, because obviously it's taken from a vantage point within the existing building.
The diagram there shows that roof terrace in particular. Would it be possible to redesign it to reduce the impact on number 53, which is to the south, I think it is, to the south, which may effectively mean a moving of those privacy panels a little further to the north.
Going off. Obviously haven't discussed directly with the applicant, but what I thought is, in terms of trying to find a balance of interest between impacts on neighbours, if the line was adjusted further to north, it would still provide for, as long as it still were allowed, for a usable space at that level. But obviously getting some space is better than just a garden roof that's untrafficable. Yeah.
And that would give the owner that amenity which he mentioned earlier, presumably.
One thing that's important to recognise is that this roof terrace is about a half level down from the mid terrace above, which is on level 2, and that mid terrace, which arguably is potentially the primary open space of the dwelling, but it only really is large enough to put an outdoor dining room table on. So the purpose of this slightly lower terrace was to provide both an outdoor area for dining and then a slightly lower terrace where, in theory, the children or something could play in a relatively sort of enclosed space but still under surveillance from that upper terrace. So that was the intent, and obviously it does provide a good outlook down onto it if it's got some sort of greenery or landscaping qualities to it.
I think that concludes the questioning from John, so thanks, Tim. Probably ask Mr. Yan to respond to the issues raised in the discussion, if you would.
Council has got a subject matter covered by the DCP which deals with the matter of roof terraces, and it covers this situation which is discussed in the report. Some leniency has been shown when the only private space to meet the requirements of the residential nature of the DCP application is on the, in a similar situation, on the roof. Quite a number of these were with South Sydney, who had the LEP before the City of Sydney took it over. So City of Sydney DCP is post a number of these approvals, and the officers have taken into consideration whether this is the required open space for the development. It's not, because there are a number of open spaces, and therefore the recommendation was to be consistent with the DCP and not introduce a new precedent where a non-required open space on a roof terrace potentially overlooking the neighbours is being supported notwithstanding the exceedances in height and exceedances in floor space that this application contains. So that's the officer's position and the reason for the difference between what you see over the road and what is being assessed on this particular application.
Thank you. John, did you want to make a further point?
The evidence from tonight, I think there is possibly an opportunity for a bit of a compromise on this particular case. I think the
I'd like to propose it.
The DCP, the objective is in fact to maintain privacy and not to achieve the sort of results which have been achieved in the past. There's some terrible examples of roof decks over, or usable roof decks over garages, which have been, which go back for many years. I think in this particular case, the design is such that the objective of protecting the privacy of adjoining owners and also not impacting adversely on the aesthetics of the whole laneway can be achieved by a redesign of that deck on top of the garage, or the rear unit. So, Mr. Chairman, I suppose the one way to do it would be to look at 2A, and a possible change would be the lower, I'm just reading it out as it exists, the lower roof terrace over the secondary dwelling is to be, to cut the rest of that paragraph out and to replace it with redesign to decrease the impact on number 53 to the south, to the satisfaction of the council's director of city planning and transport, so development and transport. So I would suggest that as a solution. Yeah.
Before I ask Ms. Yana, Helen, did you have a view on this that you would like to express?
I do think that I think that there's three spaces proposed in this development, and that there's a roof terrace which actually is quite remote from neighbours in terms of oriented towards the main street. There's the open space directly off the living areas, and this is a tertiary space which has greater proximity to the neighbours and the adjoining property boundaries. And I think on balance, because of the development controls that the city has, that it is probably one more than is absolutely required for the amenity of this development. And furthermore, I think that the enclosure required to actually give safety and security requires quite a high fence, an enclosure, and then there's the stepping up of that enclosure towards the, I mean, that it's not only the lower fence, it actually steps up towards the rear. So there's quite a lot of structure on top of the roof terrace, which to maintain the usability for that purpose would have to be retained in some shape or form, so children couldn't climb it. So I think, considering that there are other spaces which may be more appropriate for that kind of area, this is probably not the location to do that in this particular development. That's my view. Yeah.
Graham, did you want to have any further points? If not, I'll express a view. But you might want to express a view on the compromise proposed by Mr. McInerney.
The proposed amendment was in majority support. I would recommend that the wording would be to reduce the impact on the surrounding properties, not just identifying one. But obviously it would capture the one. Other than that, expressing the reasons for the staff's recommendation.
Okay, thanks for that, and I appreciate Helen's contribution as well, and the fact that there is a DCP control that is in play. But having considered both views, I'm happy to support an amendment to the condition along the lines that Mr. Mack and Andy discussed, so perhaps to say the lower roof terrace over the secondary dwelling is to be redesigned to decrease the impact on surrounding properties to the satisfaction of the director of city planning. And I do appreciate the view that Helen's put, but that I would support that amendment. So I think what I need to do is to put that proposed amendment. All in favour to say aye. Mr. McInerney would like to speak further to it.
That amendment, but I defer to you, Jim. I'll second it.
No, I think it's appropriate if you put it, and since you proposed it, so I don't want to steal your thunder.
In the words that you've used, I'll put that amendment
So, all in favour to that amendment condition 2A, say that the low roof terrace over the secondary dwelling is to be redesigned to decrease the impact on surrounding properties to the satisfaction of the director of city planning. It's the only amendment that we're proposing to the conditions. I think Mr. Yarn wants to make one further point.
There'll be a requirement to amend the reasons for the recommendation because that's specifically that's all.
That will as part of the minuting process need to be done. Anyway, I need to put that one amendment to a vote in this case. All in favour, say aye. Aye. Against. So on that basis, that amendment is carried, and the consent is approved subject to that one variation. I thank everyone for their contribution on that point. We need to now move to item 4 on the agenda, which is the development application for 52 Argyle Place, Miller's Point. I did have one registered speaker, but I have to hear from staff in the first instance. I just will ask, is David Barry in the room? Don't believe so. He may come during the course of the presentation, but if you could run through it for us, please. Just make the point that Sean Carter has returned to the meeting following item 3.
Thank you, Chair. So this is to do with 52 Argyle Place, Miller's Point. It's alterations and additions to a dwelling house with a new rear addition with a green roof, excavation for a basement level and underground link. There's a modification to a party wall, internal alterations, restoration, service upgrades and maintenance works. The application is actually recommended for refusal. It was exhibited with no submissions. That's an aerial view of the site. That's a front elevation. That's internal photos. The rear addition at the back of the site. There's another view of the rear addition in the yard. That's the basement plan, the excavation. The ground floor plan. And the first floor. This is four again, and then there's a section, and another section, and the re-elevation, and the landscaping plan. There is a non-compliance with the height, however the existing building is already over the height, so there's no increase in that, so that clause 4.6 variation has been received and is accepted. And there's compliance with the floor space ratio. So the main issue here is to do with the heritage impact of the basement and excavation. In terms of the height control, like I said, it was already over the 9 metre height control, and all works are within that. In terms of the excavation, as it is a state-listed heritage item, and it's integrated development under the Heritage Act, and the Heritage New South Wales Heritage Council have refused to grant terms of approval, largely to do with the excavation associated with the basement and its likely detrimental impact on its archaeological and historical values. and the recommendation is for refusal on that basis.
Thanks, Andrew. So we'll ask again, is David Barry in attendance? I don't believe he is. So I ask if any panel members would like to make any points on this matter. We actually don't have any alternative on this. The refusal by the Heritage Council to grant an approval is a showstopper, where legislatively we would be unable to make any other decision. So on that basis, I propose that we adopt the officer's proposal for refusal on the basis of the reasons stated. All in favour say aye. Aye. Okay, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. And that takes us to item 5, development application 26 to 30 City Road, Chippendale. I think Andrew again to provide a presentation.
Thank you, Chair. This proposal is to demolish 39 public housing units, construct a 5-storey boarding house for 73 rooms, which will be operated by a community housing provider, with one retail tenancy fronting City Road and 2 terrace dwellings at the rear of the site. The recommendation is for approval subject to conditions. There was 2 exhibition periods and 7 submissions were received in total. The submissions included issues about height, bulk and scale, privacy impacts and parking traffic, construction impacts, visual privacy, safety, overshadowing and general amenity concerns. The submitters are in blue and the site is in red. That's an aerial view. That's the view of the development from City Road. And that's in context with the large development to the north and development to the south. And that's the rear laneway, which will provide some access for 2 car parking spaces and a bicycle, and obviously for garbage and waste. This is a view back down, looking down Myrtle Lane, and those 2 terraces there are important in terms of overshadowing impacts and part of the recommendation. And that's the site viewed from Rose Street, which where the 2 new terraces will be. That's another looking north along Rose Street and south along Rose Street. And this is a photo montage of the proposed 1 City Road as amended and within internally in the internal courtyard. There is the plans for the lower ground floor with the retail on the next level, on the ground floor, and the foyer, and the first floor, second floor, third floor, the roof, the front elevation with the 12 metre height limit shown there in red, and again showing a non-compliance in height. And again, the internal north elevation showing where the non-compliance is, the 12 metre height limit, and again on the other side. That is the terraces as they would appear from Rose Street, and internally with some privacy, operable privacy screens. It's a north-south section, and section east-west, the subdivision plan, the materials, what the proposal was originally going to appear as, but since amended. And again, another internal photo montage. So there is a non-compliance with the 12 metre height limit. There is a non-compliance with the floor space ratio of 2:1. And parking is compliant. The room sizes are compliant along with the common living area. There is a non-compliance with the amount of motorbikes. Only 4 being provided. There is a compliance with the number of bicycles. There is a non-compliance with the height in stories of 3 stories rather than 5. There is no awning proposed on City Road. There's a non-compliance there. And there is an awning though, isn't there? So I think that's an error. So just forgive us on that slight error. There's compliance with the communal kitchen size, the communal living area and the outdoor living areas. There is compliance with solar access only for the development to the terraces, the affordable housing. There is a non-compliance with the remainder and the non-compliance with the number of rooms that have private open space. So the issues are height, the terrace form, solar access and motorbike parking. In terms of height, a 4.6 variation to the height standard that's been received. It's acceptable subject to reducing the bulk at the rear. And you can see that's where the non-compliance is, showing the 12-metre height. And the recommendation, as contained in the condition, is for the area in red to be deleted to comply with the height limit and also to assist in reducing the visual bulk and overshadowing to the neighbours to the southeast. And that's it, a bit further detail of that recommendation for it to be reduced by 6 metres for 2 floors. And that's in plan. So the height does provide a transition in height from 5 stories to 2-storey terraces on Rose Street, which would reduce in the number of rooms from 73 to 65 and would reduce the FSR down to 1.87 to 1. The terrace dwellings are compliant with the height and FSR controls. It is incompatible with the adjoining terrace form. So it's recommended that the rear of the terrace conform to the 2-storey scale of neighbouring dwellings. Solar access, the lower ground communal areas receive no solar access due to the large development to the north, it's acceptable with regards to the constraints of the site, and the site also does have benefit of being opposite Victoria Park, which has plenty of solar access. So that's the diagram showing where the communal open space and solar access would come in or not come in during the midwinter. In terms of just a sun's eye view, you can see the communal areas are behind the building there. Motorbike parking, 15 spaces are required, only 4 are being provided, and a 4.6 variation has been submitted, which is deemed to be acceptable with regard to the accessible location of the site and the site constraints. And the recommendation is for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. So we do have a couple of speakers on this, and this is the item on which there was a relevant to, which responded to the applicant's request for changes to the conditions, and I'm going to ask that some of those issues be addressed by the applicant in their address to the panel. I've got Kate Bartlett. Okay, so we'll get Andrew Brooks from the St George Community Housing Association to address the panel. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair and panel members, to address you on this important redevelopment in City Road. St George Community Housing is a Tier 1 community housing provider in New South Wales. We've been operating for 30 years and we manage over 5,000 dwellings. I have to say this represents probably the highest for-purpose project that we have proposed. It is directly addressing youth homelessness and will provide up to 73 units of affordable accommodation, but more particularly for a partnership with Uniting to provide training and support services for young people whose lives have been heavily impacted, to give them the opportunity to reconnect with society and make a positive contribution. We've worked very closely with the City of Sydney, and we appreciate the officers' inputs and all involved from the City in bringing this project forward. We've gone through a number of design iterations, and I have to say the project has been in probably a design phase for the best part of 2.5 years. We were a little surprised at the middle of last week to receive the conditions of consent, suggesting the amendment of the setback as has been presented. It represents a loss of 8 units, which will be very impactful on the viability of the project, as well as the outcomes we're seeking to achieve. I'd like to ask our planning consultants, McCone, and architects, DKO, to address some of the technicalities associated with the amended conditions of consent. Would that be okay with your approval? Thank you.
Okay, so was Kate Bartlett, or have you concluded what you want? So if Kate could come forward, please.
Thank you again for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. Since we received the draft conditions of consent, first thing to say is thank you to the officers. They've been incredibly collaborative on a very complex site with multiple agencies and levels of government. So it's been an interesting project. But, you know, offers a really significant social benefit. I think probably what I want to focus on today in terms of what we're seeking is really to explore the issue of the 8 boarding rooms that are proposed to be deleted. We sent through some extra information last Friday, which Council has provided a relevant to. Now, we then responded to that issue this afternoon. I'm not sure whether the panel members received... Yes? So I think the critical issue that we've been exploring in more detail really relates to the solar impact of the proposal. And what we provided this afternoon, in addition to what we had shown before, which was Eyes of the Sun, is really some of the data underpinning that solar model. And that is fundamentally for us to demonstrate that the scheme, without the loss of the 8 rooms, subject to a minor modification with the fire stair, can achieve a compliant solar outcome, which a compliant solar outcome is not to say that there's no additional impact, but is that you have 2 hours to 50% of the minimum required private open space, which is 8 square metres for dwelling, or if a dwelling doesn't receive the 2 hours solar compliance, it won't get anywhere. In our view, from the information that we've provided, we consider that the scheme is solar compliant and therefore would strongly urge the panel to slightly modify the condition 3A, which would also have the advantage of getting rid of the or dealing with the FSR control, so bringing that down so that that would be a compliant outcome. So that's really the changed wording on page 2 of our document. In terms of the other conditions, I'm happy to answer questions, and as is Matthew from DKO, but I think the loss of those 8 rooms really is critical from our perspective.
So we do have a question from Mr. McInerney.
You've addressed the sun and the solar axis. What about the impact on the adjoining, the opposite residents at the back, the rear? I mean, the physical impact of the storage. Isn't it?
I'll get Peter to explore that a little bit further. I think one of the critical things they've said to me is because of the existing built form, there isn't really a set transition pattern, and you've got buildings directly to the north that are very tall. And then in terms of the transition, we aligned it very much so with the Toby's estate in terms of some of the separation, but I'll get Peter to talk to that at a greater detail.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to address the panel. In terms of the bulk and scale to the rear, we point out that the building is actually set back an additional 6 metres from what's already on the site, so there's a greater breathing room to the Rose Street terraces than is currently the case. And then with the exploration that Kate was talking about that we've done recently with the slight amendments for the fire stair, the benefit of that as well is it's lowering that element as it is viewed to Myrtle Street. So there is a lessened impact of building form to Myrtle Street and also from the Rose Street terraces that benefits the solar impact as well as the bulk and scale wind views from that height. I think it's also important to note that the building form has been derived largely from textural relationship and set very much with the former parachute factory next door. And there is the height non-compliance with the 12 metre line, but that is only to one story above the rear. So the request for the 6 metre setback, the additional 6 metre setback from the building line is actually affecting the part of the building that is in fact compliant with council controls.
So Helen would like to ask a question.
I'd just like a clarification. We've just got the information provided by the council, and it would appear that in suggesting this setback would impact up to 6 units rather than 8. So I was just wondering where you get 8 from.
The 8 derived from the fire stair would need to be reconfigured, which was my understanding would impact. Once you reconfigured the building with the fire stair, it would take out another 2 units. Just a couple of other points regarding bulk and scale as well. This application was notified twice to the vast majority of those, or to all of the potentially impacted residents along Rose Street. We had very few submissions in an area that often does have a lot. I think as well, the setback is important, but the idea that you wouldn't see this building, given what it's delivering, it's going to be visible in some form, and I think the issue really is about whether it has negative amenity impacts.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thanks very much. So perhaps what I might do is ask Mr. Yarn to respond to points made, and I guess particularly the compromised option that the applicant has proposed in relation to the setback issue, and whether or not council officers consider that acceptable or not.
Council has been very considered, I think, in whether or not to exceed the maximum height control is acceptable. And in the vast majority of the area of the upper floor, it has been thought to be acceptable. And in that regard, there is support in part for the 4.6 variation. It's not just about solar access, but it's about the physical interface between, a dwelling house and a proposed new building, which is higher than the one that is being removed, and that's evident quite clearly in the section and side elevations. We regard the 100-year-old building, the brick building, as a historic artefact, but it's not a planning precedent, and it's not a desirable future character from the effect of interfacing with other properties. So the recommended condition is to produce what was considered to be the best architectural outcome, to produce a two-storey step onto a height which is consistent with the scale of the building on the other side of the lane. The part of the building that is ascending maximum height control and does have bulk and interface impact is the top floor itself. So I am willing to concede that that point was made, and that is specifically confined to that level. And it may be possible to at least halve the impact by reducing the exceedance of the maximum floor space control by limiting that to that part of the building, which is just the single level.
Thank you, Mr. Yarn. Do any comments or points want to be made by panel members? I'm happy to propose an amendment to condition 3A, which would be essentially on the point made by Mr. Yarn that there It is level 3 that is above the height control, therefore to reduce bulk on that height is probably justifiable and the rationale understood, less so for level 2. So I would propose an amendment to condition 3A, which says that level 3 of the boarding house is to be set back from the rear building line by 6 metres, deleting reference to level 2, which would still, I think, give that transition in scale that the officers have correctly identified as an important issue. It would still reduce some of the solar affectation, but I think would also be a reasonable compromise in terms of the loss of rooms that the condition is causing. So that would be what I would propose. And any comments from panel members on that, or support or otherwise?
Yeah, look, I would support your compromise. I think taking the third level component back 6 metres would be a nice gradation between the lower two-storey form up to the five-storey form. So I would support that.
I also would support that, Mr. Chair.
Ask Helen if she has a view.
I just wanted a clarification from Council as to why 6 metres, which actually does... Is it because it's two rooms? Because it doesn't seem to be quite... Yes, because I think if it requires a rejigging of the fire stairs and an acceptable setback which reduces the bulk and meets the objectives is addressed, then that would satisfy, yes.
Okay, well, we'll make that amendment to the condition to say level 3 of the boarding house building is to be set back from the rear building line by approximately 6 metres. So with that amended condition, unless there were any further, Ms. Young?
Even though wasn't mentioned in a oral submission, in the written submission, two other issues were raised, or a number of other issues were raised. I'll just address the issue of the parapet. The idea of the parapet, which would apply to all buildings with a bare roof, as shown in the drawings, is to try and contain the services, and it should be integral with the architecture. We've indicated the parapet could be set back from the edges of the building by the distance of the lift overrun and incorporate the lift overrun. The reasons why we suggested that the masonry is that we want to get away from effectively fences on the roof. We want a built solution that fits with the architecture, so any consultants here should take note that that'll be a constant concern where there's no containment of the roof services. But two other conditions were included in the consultant's report on behalf of the applicant to do with energy off-grid, and that was to do with effectively their satisfaction of the proposed conditions to tie up the presentation and to have the awning. So I suggested response to the submission is in relation to 3B and 3D on page 66, that at the end of the condition we put in brackets demonstrate best endeavours subject to the approval of Ausgrid bracket, and the same be applied to the awning. So the screen to the front of the substation is to be set back to the line with the glass line of the foyer entrance, and then a bracket to demonstrate best endeavours subject to the approval of Ausgrid. And that is to allow negotiation of that intent and slight variability if Ausgrid will agree to 3 metres, not 3.2, to achieve the objective of weather protection over the footpath.
So, I'd question the director, though, would he be able to personally intervene in discussions with Ausgrid? I know how difficult that can be, but is there any way the council can assist in achieving the objectives?
We definitely will, and these conditions are directed back to the director.
So, any further comments? So essentially adopting the officer's recommendation subject to amendments to 3A as discussed in relation to the setback, 3B and 3D in relation to Ausgrid approval and the words Mr. Yarn just read out. So with those changes, I'm happy to propose that we adopt that recommendation. With those changes, all in favour say aye. Carried unanimously, and thanks everyone for contributions on that matter. We move to item 6, the development application 23-47 Flinders Street. Surrey Hills do have a few speakers on this item. I will ask Andrew to run through the issues if he would.
Thank you, Chair. This proposal is to demolish the existing structure to the service station, remediate the land, and construct a six-storey mixed-use development with two retail premises on the ground floor and 28 apartments with some vehicular parking in the basement for 19 vehicles. The recommendation is for a deferred commencement consent. During the notification period, 13 submissions were received. Overshadowing, inadequate separation, setbacks, loss of privacy, height and FSR non-compliance, loss of views, concerns about lack of natural ventilation, the lack of size and impacts of the communal open space and insufficient parking were raised as issues. The subject site is in red, the submitters are in blue, joining to the west and southwest of the site. That's an aerial view. That's a photo of the site looking northwest, southwest, looking north. Looking along Maiden Lane facing south, Flinders Street facing north. It's the basement plan, the ground floor plan. First floor, second floor, third floor, roof, fourth floor and the roof plan. That's the eastern elevation on Flinders Street. The western elevation on Maiden Lane. The northern elevation, the southern elevation, a section, and another section, and another section, and the landscaping roof plan, the materials, and a photo montage of the proposal. In terms of compliance with the development standards, it does generally comply with the 22-metre height control. However, there is a non-compliance due to the lift overrun and roof elements, and there is a slight exceedance in the floor space ratio. There is a non-compliance with the height and stories. The control is 4. The proposal has 6, with the two most topmost floors in this case set in and recessive. There is a slight non-compliance with the dwelling mix. The recommendation is still for approval though. The non-compliance is mostly to do with the lack of one-bedroom apartments. There is a non-compliance with the amount of solar access to the dwellings. However, it would be compliant subject to conditions to put 5 new skylights within the roof for the topmost terraces or units. Cross ventilation complies. There is no deep soil provision. Being a service station, there are limitations about that and how to deal with that issue. Building separation, there is a non-compliance, however, it is acceptable in terms of privacy treatment to the buildings to the west. There is compliance with the apartment sizes. Floor ceiling heights comply. There is a slight variation to the communal open space, however, it's acceptable. And likewise, there is only a small non-compliance with the private open space. The application went to the Design Advisory Panel, who were generally supportive. However, they did ask for some amendments which have been taken into account during the assessment, and the amended plans reflect those recommendations as you see before you. In terms of the main issues then, it's height, floor space ratio, solar access and ground floor residential. In terms of height, there is a non-compliance, as I said, from the lift overrun, which does provide access to the communal open space that are generally found to be acceptable and needed for this development. There is also non-compliance as a result of the parapet of the building. However, that is important to screen services, as Graham discussed before in the previous item. And there is an inconsistency with the four-storey height control. However, it does step down in height from the taller buildings to the west, and there are no significant amenity impacts from this non-compliance. That is the building height as conditioned with to be raised. There is a condition to deal with the lower ground floor apartments fronting Maiden Lane to be raised, and that red line indicates where that proposal would increase by 700 millimetres. In terms of floor space, there's a 2.6% non-compliance and does not result in additional bulk. It's conditioned that the metal screening along the breezeways, which may add to the floor space if it were totally enclosed, are to be conditioned so they ensure that they are open and permeable. In terms of solar access, 54% compliance as opposed to 70%, but subject to a condition to put five of the apartments on the topmost floor to have some skylights, they will also achieve the 71% or 70% under the ADG, 65. The bedrooms to the ground floor, Maiden Lane, are compromised by their proximity to the lane. So the recommendation is to increase the ground floor level by 700 millimetres, thereby increasing the overall height, which was indicated before in the previous slide. There's also a recommendation for angled palisade fencing, which and increased privacy of planter beds and obscure glazing. So the approval, the recommendation is for approval, subject to a deferred commencement condition for the RL of the ground floor residential to be increased by 700 millimetres and the privacy measures as discussed. Skylights to the private roof terraces or enlarged openings to the balconies of the five apartments on level 5, and details of the perforated metal screen to Maiden Lane. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. So a number of speakers. I would ask George Rossi if you could come and address the panel, please.
Thank you, Chair and panel. I'd just make the following point on behalf of the residents of the Dorchester at 322-340 Burke Street, Surrey Hills. Firstly, I wanted to say that I expressed some disappointment on my behalf and many of the residents in the building that we got no notification of this meeting today. This information was passed through me through a third party who I just happened to bump into on the list. That aside, the following points I'd want to highlight are the height specifications. As mentioned before, this zone consists of 1 to 2 storey terraces and 3 and 4 storey apartments, and is zoned for 3 to 4 storeys. The applicants for the development indicate that there is a building going to 5 storeys. That's to the north of the development, and that building runs through from Burke Street through to Flinders Street, and there is no lane in the middle such as Maiden Lane, which is our building overshadows it. And so therefore, it impinges on very other things, including solar access. According to the design guide, we're entitled to 2 hours per day. There is insufficient documentation to prove that that we get those 2 hours, and we'd like someone to demonstrate to us that, you know, that's been achieved in this. Visual privacy again, the entitlement is up to 25 metres of separation. This existing project gives us 8.9 metres of separation, and we look directly into people's bedrooms from our balconies. Now, this affects mostly people in the centre of the Dorchester apartment in my building, because we have only easterly aspects. We do not have a northerly or a southerly aspect, so our only aspect is east, and they're proposing to put a 6-storey wall in front of us, which is 9 metres away. And obviously, you know, all of my windows will look directly into other people's bedrooms, directly across from that. And then that obviously impacts our views and so on. There's also many other things I'd like to cover, but mostly, you know, this construction impacts our resale value, our views. It will increase heating and lighting costs because of the solar access and basically the comfort of working from home. Because instead of looking across eastern suburbs, I'm going to be looking into a wall. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Ryan, Alex, yeah. Well, any questions of George from the panel? Thanks, George. Ryan Alexander.
Thank you, Chair and panel. I'm here representing the residents of the Barongal Flats at 342 Burke Street, Surry Hills. We're directly across, we're on the land directly across Maiden Lane from this proposed building development. And similarly, we have serious concerns with the proposed height of 6 floors plus a 7th floor in the form of a rooftop garden. I believe the assessed height limit for this site is 22 metres and that the proposed variation is still in breach of this maximum height. I also note that the height limit for this site is a maximum and that it does not entitle the applicant to a building that reaches and spans 22 metres height over the entire site. A building which if council approves to the proposed height would have severe impact on the health and enjoyment of communities within our and other neighbouring buildings. The proposed structure backs directly up against Maiden Lane, which is no more than several metres from our local heritage-listed building, and it will completely block our views of the eastern suburbs from our windows, balconies and common areas. The LEP states that the development is to allow for the reasonable sharing of views, and I note that submitted variation addresses the objective to promote the sharing of views, with the developer's assessment that it does not consider the proposed development will result in view loss or prohibit the existing views. And this statement alone gives us no confidence in the honesty or the quality of the variation request. The extent of the impact on views is severe for our building. We currently have sunrise district views across Paddington and Woollahra to the eastern suburbs horizon. And the proposal would obliterate these views from the upper 6 apartments from sitting and standing positions. The proposed building would also significantly impact on the amount of sunlight and the airflow into our block and our established community gardens. Our building was built in the 1930s and it's since been built in on 3 sides and all 12 units depend on the north and east facing windows for light and warmth during the day. With restricted sunlight as it is, the proposed height of the development would completely cut out what little natural sunlight gets through. Whilst we welcome the development of this site, it does seem like the impact on neighbouring buildings has been wholly disregarded. I note that in the original submission, in the statement environmental effects, neglected to even mention the existence of our building at all. And in summary, I'll just ask Council and the panel to not do the same, rather to seriously consider the impact on neighbouring buildings and communities within these and consider a more appropriate height of 4 floors plus a rooftop garden. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Any questions of Mr. Alexander? No? Thank you, Ryan. Now, I did also have Philip Colley on the list, but didn't want to speak, Phil. Okay. I'll actually now ask Sam Wilson on behalf of the applicant to speak. And Sam, it might be useful if you can address some of the issues raised by the two speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and panel. My name's Sam Wilson. I work for Urbis. We were responsible for putting the development application together. I will address the comments that have been made by the speakers today. Look, in the first instance, I just want to say we've had the opportunity to review the assessment report and the conditions of consent, and we're supportive of both. We're supportive of the deferred commencement conditions. We have worked very closely with Council over the past almost 12 months. As you would have seen by the assessment report, there were a number of iterations of this development to address issues primarily to do with activation on Flinders Lane, but also to address potential impacts on neighbouring properties. So the latest amended plans that were submitted provided greater activation on Flinders Street with two substantial retail tenancies. It increased the setback on levels 3 to 6. Now that was deliberately done to improve solar access to neighbouring properties so that we are compliant now with Council's DCP control to make sure that those properties that currently receive 2 hours of solar access are not impacted. And that was obviously also done to reduce the overshadowing on those properties. The communal open space on the rooftop was also increased in size. We note that the conditions obviously require an increase in the finished floor level of those ground floor apartments. While that wasn't something we have personally proposed, we support that as a way of further improving the visual privacy of those ground floor bedrooms on Maiden Lane. To address the comments that have been made today about solar access in particular, there was additional information that was provided to Council throughout the process, that overshadowing diagrams in 15-minute increments that demonstrate that the overshadowing to those neighbouring properties has been reduced and that solar access to those apartments is maintained. Visual privacy has been dealt with by providing a screen to Maiden Lane that will ensure that those bedrooms facing over Maiden Lane do not impact on those adjacent properties. And views, obviously, we have done our own assessment, but Council have also done an assessment. There are obviously existing views over the site because it is a current service station that has sat dormant for a long time. Those district views will be impacted, obviously, by any development on this site, particularly at the lower levels. We have done all that we can with this development to make sure that we are setting back, particularly at the northern boundary, to protect outlook and solar access.
Is Samantha, any questions?
Comment, Mr. Chair. You had asked Samantha to respond to the issues, and I think she's done that well, but I could add, I think that the objectors might refer to the report itself, because I think in looking through that report, it very carefully deals with these matters, and while the conclusions may not be what the objectors wanted, I think the report really answers all the questions which have been raised. Just a comment.
Thanks, Ben. Dion, would you like to? I think we're good. Thanks, Samantha. I'll ask Ms. Dion to respond to issues raised by, particularly by the objectors.
Well, I was going to respond by commenting, perhaps in the same way that panel member John McInerney. The staff have been meticulous in dealing with the issues, and I think you know from other applications that there is a meticulous approach towards overshadowing and sun loss and access. The site does need to be developed. It's a very narrow site. It's zone business, B2. When that zoning was done, it was never considered that it was going to be residential on a Shell station site. In fact, it was thought that it would be, be similar to the other developments on Flinders Street. And it was anticipated that they would be showrooms with perhaps 4 or 5 metre ground floors and 4.5 metre upper floors, and a 4-floor development would be similar in height to what has been managed to be created, which is 6 floors of residential at 3 or 3.1 metres. So that accounts for the difference. An unanticipated use, much higher floor-to-floor heights, originally set the height in stories relative to the height. Now, the height control has been around for a long time, and the site has similarly been effectively derelict for some years. It's no surprise that a development of this height or this scale eventually was going to appear. The views that are being enjoyed are not to be downplayed, but they are across the site, not down the streets or other public places. And the height of four floors could still result in a showroom or commercial building of similar height. So the point is that the 22 metre height control in the LEP is the predominating height. A lot of trouble has gone to generally making the development comply, or generally in the bulk be less than that, except for the lift overrun. And most of the documentation, the sections and the elevations in different directions, illustrate that the exceedance in the height control is just very local. So I'm generally satisfied that the development complies with the intent of the height. It isn't the use that was originally thought when the DCC floors were considered, and that the concerns that the presenters have raised are dealt with in great detail, I think, in the report. The one thing I would say is that in satisfying the deferred commencement condition, particularly 2B, that thought should be given to the landscaping of the site condition 2, and that lays out a detailed approach towards a detailed landscape plan and so on. I think that particularly given the proximity of the adjoining development over the lane, that greening of that facade would really improve the amenity of everybody, including the applicants. So in ditching a perforated metal screen, my view, it should be considered to take advantage of condition 2, and that is the detailed proposal for planting in satisfying 2B. So I think my response.
Thank you. Any observations, views?
Just in speaking in support of what you were saying, Graham, those corridors, the doors to people's places, and if they can be landscaped in such a way that can provide a greater well-being to not only the people that enter into those apartments, but also the apartments adjacent, I think that would be a great improvement in the design of the building.
Thank you. But look, I know it is a source of apprehension when a site that's been vacant for such a long period of time is imminently about to be developed. So I do empathise with the objectives and the views that they've expressed. But the reality is that there is a height control that the development largely complies with. It's things like lift overrun, an additional 700 millimetre to raise the floor of the ground floor unit. It's quite minor in terms of the scheme of things. The development height of, I think, 22 metres would produce a result similar to what is proposed by this development. So, the overshadowing privacy issues have been addressed to the best possible in a dense urban environment. There is little that this panel can do, I guess, other than to encourage the developer to adopt that approach to landscaping, that facade, to try to improve the relationship to the unit across Maiden Lane. So I would emphasise that point. Other than that, I think I'm happy to support the officer's recommendation in this case. All in favour? Aye. And so that's adopted. I do thank everyone for attending and putting your views, and we need to now move to the next item on the agenda, which is item 7, and it's the development application for 11 to 17 Eve Street, Erskineville. I'm going to ask Andrew again to present on that item.
Thank you, Chair. This is a proposal to demolish the existing terrace houses on the site and construct a to a five-storey residential flat building containing 19 vehicles and basement parking for 20 vehicles. 19 dwellings and 20 vehicles, sorry. It's been a long day. Recommendation is for approval, subject to conditions. 9 submissions were received, and they raised issues regarding the demolition of the terrace houses. The low-scale building should be retained. They raised issues about overshadowing, density and traffic impacts, reflectivity of building material and tree removal, and the wildlife impact that would flow on from that, along with construction noise. The site is in red and the submitters are in blue. It's an aerial. The black line showing the Ashmore precinct, urban renewal precinct. And it's a closer view of the site in relation to the adjoining development in the area. This site viewed from Eve Street. Again, another view from Eve Street. This is the rear view. That's the site that's adjoining to the south, which the car park entry will be via. They will share the same driveway. That's the Lux Apartments to the north by the same architect. And another view of the Lux Apartments to the north. That's the Motto Apartments to the east on the other side of Eve Street. It's the basement level, the ground level, first floor, second floor, third, fourth, and that's the Eve Street elevation, the courtyard elevation, the rear elevation of the courtyard buildings, again, and the southern elevation, and a photo montage. There's the material center board. The red circle indicates the breakthrough panel for the car parking for the adjoining south of the site to the south. It's the ground floor of the adjoining development. And again, the southern elevation, or the northern elevation of that. And in terms of compliance with controls, there is a non-compliance. There are 3 height limits, however, the 12 metre appears to be an anomaly, and so it was meant to be just the 15 metres, so the 17.46 actually sort of balances out between the 15 and the 22 metre height limit, and the FSR is compliant. There is a non-compliance with the height and stories, and there is a compliance though with the dwelling mix. There's a non-compliance with the amount of solar access. Only 58% of apartments get the 2 hours of sunlight during the winter solstice. There's compliance with cross ventilation and deep soil. There's compliance with the building separation, from the front and the rear. However, there is a non-compliance with the 3 metre to the sides. The apartment sizes comply. Communal open space is compliance, as well as the private open space. The design advisory panel were generally supportive, subject to the height being having no amenity impacts, and that the privacy to the side boundaries were dealt with, and that the soil depths above the communal open space also worked through. In terms of the issues, height, has said that there has been a slight error in the drafting of the LEP, so there is a basically meant to be a 22 metre height limit and then a 15 metre height limit, not a 12 metre height limit in between. But the development overall is compliant in that height, or the intention of the height, and it will be the same height as 19 to 21 East Street to the south, and there are no amenity impacts. And that's the non-compliance, the actual Sydney LEP height control. So the 12 metres in yellow is probably what we consider an anomaly, or a mistake. And that's the Ashmore height and stories map. However, so you can see the dotted red line, that would be the compliance with the height control. However, in the context of the sites to the north and to the south, it is contextually a good fit. Again, that's another southern elevation, the dotted red line showing the 15 metre height limit. In terms of solar access, the DA has been amended to increase the direct sunlight from 26% to close to 60%. The projecting bay windows to East Street facade have been provided. The Lux development does overshadow the rear facade of the development, and only, well, 89.5% of apartments do achieve 1 hour of direct sunlight. That's the sun's eye view at 9 to 12 and from 1 to 3. In terms of the building separation, they are built right to the boundary rather than 3 metres. However, there are considered to be no setback or no impacts, mostly to do with the fact that most of the walls on the side are blank. There is a rear laneway identified in the DCP, however, it's no longer required. That's a little bit further information about that. And the recommendation is for approval.
Thank you, Andrew. I don't actually have any registered speakers for this item. Was anyone here to speak on item 7? No, so it's not. Sure. Okay, well, thank you for that. Panel, any discussion or any questions?
Look, I'll just make a note, and then this is a general note, but the size and the scale of the balconies of this development is such that they're very usable. Some balconies meet the ADG but don't necessarily always provide good space for people to use. In this development here, it's to be commended, these balconies are essentially an outdoor room, which I think is a positive contribution to the building.
Thank you for that, Sean. Any John or Helen? No? Well, I'm happy with the recommendation to approve this subject condition, so all in favour say aye. So carried unanimously, thank you. We move to item 8. Ron Station, Darlinghurst Road, Potts Point. Andrew, to briefly present on this. I don't actually have any speakers. Anyone here to speak on item 8? No? Okay, Andrew.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application to use the reuse of the first floor as a brothel containing 6 working rooms with operating hours from 10 a.m. to 12 midnight, Monday to Sunday. It's recommended for approval subject to conditions. During the exhibition period, 2 submissions were received which raised issues about inappropriate use, the proximity to residential and noise impacts. The subject site is in red and the submitters are adjoining to the east in Roslyn Street in blue. That's an aerial view. That's a photo of the building. The entry is just where the red arrows are, just above the Santos sign there. That's across the road, the Potts Point Hotel, the former bank. The Empire, also across the road on Roslyn Street. That's the floor plan. In terms of compliance with development standards, the brothel is permissible in the B2 local centre zone, and there are no restrictions on hours for brothels. The issues are then the appropriateness of the use and the location of it in relation to the residential and the cumulative impact. This diagram shows where residential are in blue, so the closest being right next door. However, the entry and exit to this premises is via Darlinghurst Road. The yellow stars indicate where other adult premises are, and also the red are other sex on premises are located. The recommendation is for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. So no speakers, any comments, questions? No, I think I'm happy to propose the recommendation. All in favour, aye. I carried unanimously, thank you. Move to item 9, the DA for 17 Wellington Street, Chippendale.
Thank you, Chair. This is proposal is for alternates to a two-storey commercial warehouse, including a third-storey addition. Facade improvements, landscaping alterations and end-of-journey facilities for bike people that choose to journey their work via a bicycle. The recommendation is for approval subject to conditions. During the notification, two submissions were received which raised issues about height and bulk, amenity impacts, overshadowing concerns and implications of having a subterranean sewage line under the site. That's the subject site in red, and the submitters were adjoining to the east and to the south. That's the aerial view. The Carlton United Brewery site is to the north. That's the site viewed from Wellington Street looking west. And that's the site adjoining, which is the White Rabbit Gallery. That's a close-up view of the site viewed from Wellington Street. And these are buildings adjacent to the site on Wellington Street looking southeast. That's a view looking over the rooftop. Again, another rooftop view, and also looking to the north where that last of the block 11 is to be is coming up now. Again, there's another view looking east. That's a photo montage. The topmost floor is what's proposed part of this application and be recessed. That's the ground floor plan. It shows a cafe and office space. The office space again on the first floor and again on the second floor. And the roof plan with some solar panels. Northern elevation, southern elevation, western elevation, eastern elevation, landscaping, a photo montage, and material sample board. There is a non-compliance with the 9 metre height limit, and there is also a non-compliance with the floor space ratio, but if you do take into account the end of trip facilities, the bike parking, there is a compliance. It is also a non-compliance with the two height and stories of two. It went to the design advisory panel. They did note that there was an exceedance in the height control, however they were generally supportive, mainly because of the way that the topmost floor has been recessed. There's also, they were supportive of the fact that it activates the ground floor to Wellington Street. So in terms of height, the building does have an overall height of 12.81 metres, which is an exceedance of 42%. However, there is no significant amenity impacts, and it does provide a transition between the White Rabbit Gallery and the two-storey building to the east. These are diagrams which show the development in the context of what is going on around to the north. Again, another view analysis of that. And from somebody's apartment looking north. And again, another view looking north. And the recommendation is for approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Nobody here to speak on this item. I have no one registered. So, panel, all good? Okay, so move the recommendation. All in favour say aye. Aye, adopted unanimously. Thank you. That leaves us item 10, which is the development application 220 Victoria Road, Beaconsfield.
Thank you, Chair. This proposal is to demolish the existing dwelling and construct a three-storey semi-detached dwellings, each with a rear garage and a studio above. Torrens Title subdivision, there's also a voluntary planning agreement for the monetary contribution as part of the Green Square program. The recommendation is for deferred commencement approval subject to conditions. Three submissions were received which raised issues about bulk and scale, the front building setback and rear building line, privacy issues, loss of acoustic privacy for the use of the Relane studio and solar access. There are the submitters in blue in relation to the site in red. It's an aerial view. That's the site, the arrow showing there, to be demolished. Another view of the building in context of the development on to the south on Victoria Street. Victoria Lane, another view from the lane and again from the lane. During the assessment, the application has been amended. The first floor has been set back to align with the neighbouring dwellings and the laneway structure has been amended to reduce solar impact. That's the ground floor plan. First floor, second floor, the Victoria Street elevation, the rear elevation, the elevation as viewed from the east, looking at the garage structure and the studios above, and that's also a view from the west, from the laneway. That's the cross section, so it shows the compliance with the height limit. There's also compliance with the floor space ratio and the parking. There is a non-compliance with the height in stories, however, in its context, it's found to be appropriate. It's compliance with the deep soil and the height of the laneway structure of 5.4 metres. There's compliance with the solar access, and the neighbours, though, do not receive their 2 hours of sunlight, but in the context of their development, they overshadow themselves, so it's very difficult to achieve the 2 hours of sunlight when they already don't. So yes, the adjoining dwellings are three stories, so it's been recently approved as a three-story dwelling nearby. So the recommendation condition is to reduce the prominence of the top floor. However, the overall impact of this is acceptable in terms of its amenity and its context. In terms of the neighbouring solar access, so the reduction of neighbouring solar access. It's a result of the compliant laneway structure, and as I said, the neighbouring site largely self-shadows itself. The balconies, it's recommended that the second floor rear balconies are deleted, as it would reduce privacy or overlooking, and adds to the visual bulk of the development, so they're recommended to be deleted, and that's what's shown in red. There's a voluntary planning agreement and a monetary contribution. That's why it's forming part of the deferred commencement. And that's the recommendation. Thank you.
Yes. I do have a couple of people registered, Daniel Falcon, the applicant, and Derek Raffi, the architect. Does one of you want to speak? Or? Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Chair and panel members. I'd like to, obviously we're happy with the recommendation that's being recommended for approval as a deferred commencement. We, however, I have the utmost respect for Andrew and his team. I am a little bit disappointed. A few of the items haven't been raised in that discussion. I think that the actual planning officer has taken his planning hat off and put his architect hat on and put his pen through the design. A number of the design changes, design modifications, to be honest, in my 20 years I've never seen 10 conditions requiring design modifications. And a lot of those items relate to internal atrium that has no impact to the public domain, has no impact to neighbours, I really don't understand where the actual officer has made some of these changes. Some of the changes where we already have a window, he's recommending another type of window, so glass louvers when we already have ventilation. He's recommending opaque, to changing the glass to being opaque so that there's no view down into what is a landscaped atrium. So it really makes the atrium redundant in those areas. So a number of those conditions are really onerous and have no impact to the public plan. I really don't understand why they have been put in there. In terms of the second floor balcony, I can understand why that has been done in terms of privacy. I don't understand why, when there's other alternatives, we can easily incorporate a planter box along the edge there that can easily resolve that any privacy issues. So that the user, it can't be used as a maintenance space. It prevents the user from going to the edge, from overlooking into the rear neighbours. So at least then we've got the amenity of full height glazing. We've got the amenity of that space. So again, that is another major design change, which I think there are alternatives. Obviously, we'd prefer to have this to go through, where The most onerous being in the internal atrium, but yes, I do see that there is an alternative to that rear balcony. Some of the other changes, the only other item which I'd like to just make mention before I finish, and I understand this has been quite, taken quite long, the front fence, there was a recommendation to reduce it down to 1.2. In the reports to council, I disagree that we've actually have it at 1.2 at one end and it does change. And there's recognition that there is adjoining neighbours where that palisade fence does change with the actual fall of the footpath. So all I would ask is that we have 1.2 at one end and there is variation for that. And it is, while this is only a minor aspect, it is important to have a nice clean cut line to that fence rather than a disjointed line. That's all.
Thank you. Any questions for the speaker? No? No. The only question I'll ask is, so of that list of nine things, is it the atrium that's the... Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, Helen?
For the planners, the rationale for the complete deletion of the balcony as opposed to screening of the balcony or minimisation of the balcony. So, it's already screened as far as I can.
So, Helen, you didn't have a specific question for the speaker. Yeah. So, thank you. And I'll ask. Perhaps Graham can respond to the issues you've raised and that Helen's raised. Thank you.
There's a very low support for elevated rear-facing balconies, and that's off a master bedroom. You can see that the development itself is wider than it's the neighbouring properties, and it has the potential to create a serious privacy overlooking impact. So that is very much consistently the council's perspective on that. The what to do with a full height glazing wall is another question. And the idea of the condition was to give some latitude to include full height glazing element near to the common wall and then have a full height contained element window for the remainder. A shop front, elevated shop front on the second floor is not an appropriate glazing treatment to an infill development, and there needs to be a degree of defensiveness for the occupants and a constraint over the overlooking all the neighbours. So that's why there's a condition trying to handle for approval some elements of the design which were concerning. Now I agree it could incorporate landscaping, but there wasn't landscaping proposed. We would like to see landscaping. The atrium translucent, not opaque glass condition is to do with the elevated, when you're on the upper levels. And you can see on the second floor how that I'm just wondering whether the condition which refers to the first floor ought to be the second floor. Because it is not to do with internal amenity. It's to do with the glaze surrounds the atrium up high, looking across the neighbouring property. Yeah.
The change that you're proposing to X to make it the second floor hallway windows instead of the first floor?
Because of the information on the adjoining properties is quite sketchy, but it does seem to be either onto a roof or a front setback that's overlooking. I mean, it would probably have more impact on the development as proposed rather than the neighbours.
So the condition in question is condition 2F in relation to the atrium windows. So is the proposal to change it to the second floor hallway windows facing into the atrium?
Reflection that it could be deleted.
Right. Any observations? Okay. So, so with the deletion of condition 2F, which is in respect of the atrium, Ellen?
Just another question. So if understanding the rationale for the upper level balcony and that is sitting over another room below it, bedroom, just a roof. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So what we're proposing is to delete condition 2F. The rest remain in place. It will be a process for the applicant to work through with council planners in terms of accommodating those changes to what's proposed. With that amendment, I'll put that to the panel. All in favour say aye. Aye. Okay. So that's carried unanimously with that change. That was the final item on the agenda, so I thank everyone for their attendance. I thank staff in particular and fellow panel members, and I'll conclude the meeting. So thank you very much.